This is the Deep Side of Dallas. I'm Rudy Bush, Deputy Editorial Page Editor for the Dallas Morning News.
And I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System. Dallas and the communities around us are changing. We're here to talk about our history, our future, and where we are today.
On the Deep Side, we dive into local news and issues through candid conversations with people making an impact in Dallas and beyond. And you can stay up to date on every episode and other great shows from our newsroom. Just follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcast.
Welcome to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host, Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News. And Rudy, today's discussion is right in your wheelhouse. It's municipal election season here in Dallas, and voters in the city weighed in on 14 city council races on May 1st. And our featured guest for today, Jennifer Staubach-Gates, actually did not participate in this year's District 13 race because she has termed out after 8 years serving city council. But still a fascinating conversation and a fascinating time of year, especially for someone like you who follows Dallas politics the way I follow sports.
Yeah, this is nerd time for me, 100%. And I'm in school. We're coming up here on the runoff elections, and we're going to have a few races that we still got to decide. But we had just an interesting election season, as you said. Dallas council members have to defend their seats every 2 years. And they get 8 total years that they can serve, and then they got to go. And this year was really interesting, Paul, because you had for the first time, really, in my memory certainly, and kind of in modern Dallas political history, a mayor who inserted himself very directly into these races. And it creates a lot of tension, a lot of problems, a lot of intrigue, I guess, for guys like me who write about this stuff.
Shouldn't you think it's a sure thing if you're going to put yourself out there?
I think you should think it's a pretty sure thing if you're a mayor who's trying to wrangle 8 votes, and it wasn't a sure thing, as it turned out. His candidates did not perform well. They didn't make runoffs. And then you had some candidates who were sort of loosely, if not directly associated with him, but had similar messaging that he has had directed at council members. They didn't do well for the most part. So we're going to be left with this city council that I think is going to be a little bit testy.
It does sound like it. Now, were there any other things that surprised you that happened before we get into the conversation with Jennifer?
Yeah, I was surprised that by a number of things. Paul, I thought that a candidate in Southern Dallas by the name of Maxie Johnson, who's a very popular DISD board member, would do better against the incumbent Carolyn King Arnold. He did make it into a runoff, but he didn't do very well. I was somewhat surprised, although I probably shouldn't have been, by how well Lakewood's representative Paula Blackman did against 2 pretty good, candidates. She just wiped the floor with him, basically. So what it reaffirmed to me, really, and I should know this, I've been at this long enough, is that nothing in Dallas politics beats being an incumbent.
Right.
People, they don't really show up to vote for new people very often.
Well, it doesn't sound like there was the greatest voter turnout in the world anyway. Obviously, we had a mayoral election last go around, so the voter turnout was higher. But, for a city of a million people to get, 67,000 voters out, to me, seems not so great.
It's a bummer every time. I think we crawled just over 10%. At the end, which it's been lower than that, believe it or not, but it goes to tell you that municipal elections are not national elections. And what was interesting about this cycle was the way I saw national political themes try to be sort of injected into all these races, particularly around the question of policing and all of us know, and you and I have done a show on this already, related to the struggle we're having in this country over policing. And without getting boring everybody with too many of the details, the mayor kind of found himself on one side of this, claiming that the council had tried to defund police. That wasn't quite what was going on. But those messages don't resonate in municipal elections for whatever reason. You would think they would, because crime is always the number one concern of municipal voters. And then streets.
Street racing, too.
Street racing, absolutely. Code compliance, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, all that's to say that 10% is terrible, but you can't expect these municipal races to draw big crowds. They just don't do it.
Yeah. Do you expect any surprises with the runoffs that are coming on June 5th?
I don't know if I expect surprises. I think that we might see at least one incumbent lose. I think David Blewett, who represents Eastern Dallas,
Uptown, Lower Greenville area,
Oaklawn, parts of Oaklawn. That is a really tough race that he's facing with a guy by the name of Paul Ridley. And what's interesting about Ridley is people who listen to this show presumably have a pretty deep interest in Dallas. Ridley's a guy who was Angela Hunt's appointee to the Dallas Plan Commission. So kind of getting that crowd back into City Hall will be interesting.
And has a relationship, as I understand, with former council member Philip Kingston,
yep,
too.
Was Kingston's appointee as well. And so, you know, there's that district traditionally has been kind of the rebel district, for lack of a better word, and I think Ridley is a guy who will bring that tradition back if he wins.
Well, we're talking here in the present tense, but the conversation we had with Jennifer Staubach Gates was really reflective, and not just reflective on her 8 years as representing District 13, but also growing up in Dallas as the daughter of Roger Staubach. It was a pretty interesting conversation.
Super interesting conversation, and I think Jennifer is one of those people, and I'm glad we had her on here to talk about it, because she really has dedicated herself to the city. She couldn't be more of a sort of superstar family in Dallas. I don't think we get a bigger name than Roger Staubach, but you'd never kind of know it to meet her. She's just your council member, basically, and I thought her story was really interesting, and the way she grew up here and cruising Forest Lane and all that kind of business.
Yeah, hard to imagine your dad being Captain America, quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, especially during that era.
Right, and you're hanging out, you know, down on Forest with the crowd. So
absolutely.
Pretty cool.
So, you know, one of the things that you did ask her as we conclude, and I won't give the answer away, but you did ask her about her future in politics. Yeah. And do you think that she does have a future in politics?
Oh, I think she absolutely would have a future in politics if she wanted it. You know, I think it's up to her and what she wants and what her family wants. And I think she's told pretty much anybody who will listen that she wants to spend time with her family. And that's not a line. In her case, from my experience, she really does, you know, want to be with her kids and her grandkids and her husband and her mom and dad. But if she wanted to get into Dallas politics, if she wanted to be the mayor of Dallas or something else, yeah, she would be able to pull it off. She's got all the credentials.
And heck, Eric Johnson maybe made it easier for a new mayor to come in and be the mayor here in a couple
plenty
years.
Plenty of people talking about it.
Well, we'll be right back with a really fun and wide-ranging conversation with Jennifer that reflects on her time on council as well as her time growing up for you know, a young person in Dallas whose father is a celebrity. So we'll be right back on the Deep Side of Dallas podcast.
At the University of North Texas System, we embrace the future. Energized by new possibilities, we collaborate across institutions, disciplines, and industries to creatively imagine and implement solutions in our home region of Dallas-Fort Worth and beyond. Whether in Dallas, Denton, Fort Worth, or Frisco, throughout North Texas, across our state and beyond, the UNT system is fully committed to being a leader for the North Texas region.
Welcome back to the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. I'm Paul Corliss, Chief Communications Officer for the University of North Texas System, here with my co-host Rudy Bush of the Dallas Morning News, and we'd like to welcome a very special guest to the podcast today, Jennifer Staubach Gates, whose time as a Dallas City Council member is coming to an end after 8 years representing District 13, which covers Preston Hollow and Northwest Dallas, among other places. And just excited to kind of talk about your legacy and impact on Dallas. So Jennifer, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Yeah. Looking forward to the conversation.
Thanks for doing this with us. You and I have gotten to know each other pretty well over the past 8 years or so, with you being on council. And obviously, your time has come to step down. Someone else is going to come in. But just looking back on those 8 years, was it what you thought it would be? Was it totally different? What did you get out of this that was opening to your eyes?
Well, that's a good question, and I don't know if I fully understood or I had a real understanding my expectations for what it was going to be like. I don't think I jumped in it without doing a lot of research or preparation. The campaign, I think, gets you prepared to serve. So I would say I don't think my expectations or I anticipated it to be one way or another. It's been extremely rewarding. It's been challenging at times. I think my 8 years have been filled with so many controversial, items or issues that we've taken up, as well as some really sad times for the city. Yeah. 7/7, a tornado that ripped through, my district and two others, as well as, ending in this pandemic and the civil unrest and going back to 2014 and Ebola. So I've had, losing a council member to an indictment. I mean, we've had a lot of ups and downs. But I will say this, I will never, it's changed the lens I look through the city with, and I've met incredibly great people and developed really good relationships, and it's been an honor and a privilege to serve. And while I'm counting down the days, it's very bittersweet, and I'm going to miss
it. Everyone says that, I'm counting the days.
When you say it changed the lens of how you look at the city, what do you mean?
Well, I think from the perspective that I don't know if I really fully understood how city government touches everyone's lives. And I think now when I visit other cities and I see things, buildings that have been preserved, I know that those things just don't happen. Right. And trails and parks and, we've done some incredible things, that Clyde Warren Park, which is, park departments from all over come to look at what we did over a highway. And when I go into other cities, I think when I see them just working on their roads, I stop and kind of look and I think I look at other cities through a different type of lens. And then through Dallas, I'll see a building and go like, how did that ever get zoned? Or why is that this way or that way? And I've learned a lot about why, there have certain things happened in Dallas that I wasn't aware of before I took office.
That makes sense. Most of those 8 years I lived in your district, and the tornado is one that jumps out at me. Rudy's from around the corner too. Okay. And that's one that was just so complicated, especially as you had different, you had people of wealth that had things they were going through, and you had people that had nothing that they were going through.
Yeah, and just the way it changed the landscape and the,
physically.
Still, and it's going to be that way for a lot of years. When you drive down Inwood Road and you just see this was filled with trees and, the rebuilding that's happening, and still some of the, I got an email today that people are frustrated with homes that still look like the tornado happened yesterday, and it's been 18 months, so... exactly. So I, when I start to, I'll have that idea in 10 years from now, when it starts looking back, and there will still be gaps, right, in vegetation and tree height and canopy that we'll kind of remember that.
The other one you threw out was the Ebola situation, which, I guess the first case in the U.S. of Ebola was found in your district.
Right.
Did that prepare you for what we've been going on, or what's been going on the last year?
It really did. I think it prepared me to really understand what the role of a council member and the most effective things you can do. And it was, the mayor at the time, Mike Rawlings, gave me a call, and he said, my background, I'm a registered nurse, and I still keep my license. And he called me, he says, you're not going to believe this, but we've got Ebola in the nurse's district. And we were all like, and I went home that evening, and I was told about 5:30, I was supposed to leave town the next day for National League of Cities. And I said, what's my role going to be in this terrible crisis, and I went to the, I got up the next morning, city manager said, meet us at the office of OEM, the emergency management, and Rawlings was wonderful about taking me along, and, you know, he and Clay Jenkins, and, you know, by noon that day, we were in a room with the governor and CDC and Presbyterian Hospital, and I realized I was the one individual in that room that understood my constituents and the diversity and the challenges that they were up against before Ebola and the 35 languages that was spoken in the area, and they lived very dense. And I was able to be an advocate and a voice for that community. And I knew the nonprofits that are already engaged, and we could get them together quickly to be able to really help the residents through that really challenging time.
Being a nurse, did that uniquely equip you for the coronavirus pandemic as well?
Yeah, I just understood the epidemiology behind the different viruses, and I wasn't, obviously Ebola wasn't something we spent a lot of time studying in nursing school because we hadn't had it in the United States, but I quickly learned that, you know, the way it was transmitted, it wasn't going to be the community threat. It was going to be because the virus gets stronger as related to how long it's been in the person's body. And so the person's more contagious at the end and of their disease, as well as even postmortem care. And that was, so then I understood that the people of the neighborhood were probably going to be saving, we weren't going to see an outbreak. But, and then I, you know, fully understood in the beginning of the coronavirus that it was very different, and we were going to have this communicable disease and the threat to the transmission in, you know, the public transmission was going to be present. And we also, I knew that there was a lot we didn't know. And so so I was probably more comfortable when protocols and recommendations were changing, because I understood that in the medical profession, you know, they're still learning, and they're very hesitant to, you know, say that your immunities last longer than 6 months if they haven't been able to study that. And, you know, so I understand why the mask protocol changed, you know, and, you know, and I knew that, you know, there's always medical, you know, medical professionals challenging each other. I just hated to see the political part of it. And that's something that I knew was going to happen because I saw a little bit of it in Ebola.
Yeah. Yeah, we were talking about that last time, actually. You know, it's funny you talk about the landscape in District 13 and how it changed. And I think for those of you who are listening who got to Dallas yesterday, Jennifer Staubach Gates is the daughter of Roger Staubach, one of the immortal Dallas Cowboys. But what I think a lot of people might not know, even who've been in Dallas a long time, is that the area you represent, you grew up in, you raised your family in this area. You have, you know, those trees that went down on Inwood. You know that area like the back of your hand. So I was wondering if you could just kind of take us back in time and talk a little bit about growing up in this area, growing up in what in some ways were really unique circumstances as the daughter of this iconic football player, but also what seems like, just from getting to know you, was kind of as normal as it could possibly be. I mean, what was that like, being a kid in Dallas, Roger Staubach's daughter, and just growing up here?
Well, you know, I came with my parents. That my dad was a rookie in 1969, and he, because he had served 4 years in the Navy, he was an old rookie. He was 28 years old, and I was the oldest of three, a three-year-old, a one-year-old, and a newborn at the time. They chose to reside in Dallas, in Richardson at first, because they didn't know how long he'd be at the Cowboys, and homes were trading quickly there, and young families were, So we grew up as very idyllic childhood. We went to the Prairie Creek Elementary School there, lived across from a park. Kids would knock on the door and ask my dad to play football. You know, I have incredibly wonderful parents. It's a privilege to be their daughter. They've always loved us unconditionally, but they let us, you know, figure things out for ourselves. They didn't really hover, and they let us fall and make mistakes. But we grew up, you know, knowing we had incredible support from them. And then it was obvious, my dad, he always worked, you know, they didn't make the money back then that they do now in professional football. So he had a part-time job, and then he worked in the off-season and developed a real estate career. And And towards the, you know, in, as in 77, they moved into, actually it was in Mr. Kleiman's district, in District 11, right across from District 13, when they knew that they Dallas was now going to be their home. They were both from Ohio, but Dallas was going to be the place where my dad was going to have, you know, continue to work and have a career. And I then moved, we all moved over to Catholic schools, and I went to Ursuline. And like you said, so District 13, you know, we had friends that lived, you know, when you go to a private school like Ursuline, you do pull from a probably bigger area. But, you know, I saw Dallas. We always had friends that would, friends or family that would come visit us. And we always would take them to Fair Park. We love Fair Park and paddling in the swans on the lake, you know, the Cotton Bowl, that's where I got to actually watch my dad play in the Cotton Bowl for a few years before they started playing at the old Texas Stadium in Irving. And then we, you know, I think it made it really special when I was on council. That first year was the 50th anniversary of JFK's assassination.
Oh, wow.
And I think it was really healing. I mean, Mike Rawlings gave an incredible speech as the mayor. But to be there, and my parents were able to be there with me, and because it was a, you know, my parents had a lot of hesitancy about coming to Dallas because of, one, because my dad had two bad losses in the Cotton Bowl, one to SMU and one to Navy. So he used to say he was undefeated in 49 states the year he lost that national championship and but won the Heisman. But he also, you know, JFK's assassination was a real dark spot in Dallas's history. And but everybody, you know, when we'd have family come in town, they want to go by and see where he was assassinated.
And your dad won the Heisman the year that
exactly.
JFK was
assassinated.
Oh, I didn't know that.
It was all the same year. And so when they came here, I think, but then at the 50, I think we really healed as a city, and I think it showed our resilience as a city getting through those years. And then having that commemoration at 50 years, I think was, it was to be with my parents for that experience and to be able to represent the city. But, you know, so they, my parents came to grow and love Dallas, and they, it became our home. Two of my siblings were born here. And I've loved the city. My parents have loved the city and have always kind of encouraged us to give back. But, you know, growing up, like Rudy and I were reflecting on, you know, did we, you know, cruising down Forest Lane, you know, that, you know,
yeah.
By the
what
mural.
What was that scene like?
Yeah, by by that mural, you know, that was then, of course, within my first term, there was controversy on the mural.
Right,
somebody,
right.
You know, was like, wanted to repaint it, and somebody didn't want to paint it, and, you know, I think that's one of the iconic walls of District 13 and North Park, you know, growing up, yeah. Sliding down the planters as a kid. And, you know, so in, there is a lot of history. I know District 13 is not known for, you know, the landmarks of the city, but, you know.
We do what we can with what we've got, right?
Right, yeah. I spent a lot of time there.
We've got a brick wall that somebody painted.
You know, the other thing you and I touched on a little bit, or we talked about here and there, is that the nature of celebrity was a little bit different back in the day, and you could sort of have this situation where you weren't constantly intruded upon, and that gave you space to grow and, you know, change. And it just doesn't seem like it is today, where every move you make is so scrutinized and so, you know, taken apart. You and I guess part of it too is your dad wasn't given the press a lot of reason to go, you know, write a bunch of crazy stories or whatever. But it just seems like things are so much different now, and you could grow up and go to Forest Lane and, you know, head to North Park and Fair Park and just do kind of the Dallas things without having the constant hassle around you. And I mean, am I getting this totally wrong, or is that basically how it
no,
was?
No, I think I felt, you know, pretty very normal growing up, and there wasn't the scrutiny on celebrities' kids I think that you see today, or the attention.
Yeah.
There wasn't the social media. Yeah. We didn't. There wasn't 24-hour news that they're trying to come up with a story about. You know, so it was very different environment. I do feel like I shared my parents with the public, which I think is a little bit of a different experience. And people feel like they knew who we were. just because they knew my dad. You know, he was a he was well known in the neighborhood, and in, so when you would go to restaurants or to church, but people got used to seeing him at those places, and really we could have a pretty normal life growing up without without too much attention. But you do feel like you share a parent that way. You know, he spoke at two of the five commencement addresses for our college. You know, the two of us that went to Catholic school both asked him, which that's an unusual experience for your dad to be your commencement speaker. So
yeah, you can't be like, Dad, it's you again. Right?
Yeah, right. Yeah. Like, I don't think my daughter would want to listen to me talk at all.
Trust
not
me,
that I have the resume that Roger has.
I embarrass my daughter just by being in the house.
You mentioned I was reading the profile that was in the Dallas Morning News on April 18th that Ryan Sanders wrote, and there was a comment that kind of stuck with me where you decided to enter politics and your daughter was going on spring break, and he said, you better not do anything stupid or get in the news.
Yeah.
I imagine that there was a degree of that your family's lived with your whole life.
Yeah, I think I understood that because you know, when you have a celebrity parent, if you do something, it's noticed and it reflects back on them. And my dad would remind us of that if we were, you know, in trouble that, hey, you know, it's a reflection on them. They also were very, they still let us get into, you know, plenty of trouble, even as strict as they were. I knew that the me entering politics was going to, you know, potentially shine back and my kids could, you know, hear about it, or if they made a mistake, and social media was out there when they were growing up,
right,
and
right.
if they, it would be potentially a news story, and I kind of gave them that heads up and that warning, and it was spring break, and I gave that warning and then immediately saw a photo on Instagram one of her friends had posted that I was concerned about. So when she saw that.
Were they cruising on Forest?
No, it wasn't. I was a young parent, I would have thought I knew exactly what my kids were going to do, but when my oldest was in high school, they used to go down to the Trinity River, and I'm like, that is not a safe place to be hanging out. So they moved from Forest down there for a while. I don't know where the kids hang out today, but
I don't either. Well, the politics thing, it was kind of an interesting turn, right? Because your daughters were, one of your daughters, I think, was grown. Your other daughter was basically grown. I mean,
she was in college.
She was in
freshman college.
Okay, and what made you decide, hey, look, this is time to get into city council, which is it's kind of an interesting side of politics, I think, the local city council. It's not like running for Senate or something like that. It really is door knocking, kind of meat and potatoes politics. Why did you decide at that point in your life that, hey, this is what's next for me?
Well, I had been introduced to the impact of city government, I think, at first through zoning cases, which I think is pretty common. One was Ursuline. When my oldest daughter was at Ursuline, they had wanted to build a soccer field, which was a residential lot, and Ursuline had purchased and thought, move forward on fundraising, and we're going to put the soccer field. And the neighbors were like, no, you're not. And they lobbied City Hall to deny the effort you have to get what's called an SUP to be able to allow the zoning for the soccer field. And that really upset me because I thought, you know, this is, you know, a few neighbors could stop a school, girls from playing soccer. It's not like it's football lights. I mean, the lights were part of it because, you know, soccer is a winter sport and you got to turn lights on at 5 o'clock
right.
in January.
Right.
But, you know, if anybody goes to a girls' soccer game, you're lucky if there's 50 people on the sidelines. And so it was upsetting that we were not granted that soccer field at the time. And then there was a case that I worked on the opposite side. They wanted to put a Cinemark on Inwood, and it was close to where my husband and I had bought our first home, and I didn't think it was appropriate use for that property, and so I lobbied against it. And so I understood that, but at the time, and My kids were young, and I wasn't going to enter politics, but I really understood the impact that city government has on zoning, has on street conditions, on police. And then when the opportunity arose, like I mentioned earlier, my parents kind of taught us you give back, and this was a way to be able to serve the community and in a really unique fashion. And I jumped in, not really realizing the full responsibility and everything I was going to be able to experience over the next 8 years.
Over the course of those 8 years, as you are exiting, what do you think Dallas is poised for from a positive standpoint? What do you think the biggest challenges are ahead, throwing coronavirus aside?
Yeah, we're a resilient city. I mean, we've had a lot of things happen, and you know, it's, I think people at City Hall might take credit when things are good, but there's a lot of forces outside of City Hall that keep our city running. And we have an incredibly philanthropic community that really stands up. I would like to see business, philanthropic, and government, you know, continuing those partnerships. It's much needed. Everybody looks to government to fix all the problems. And, you know, we're not equipped for it. And we don't want to raise your taxes to the point where we can pay for it either. So we really do rely on, you know, working with anchor institutions. You know, it's great to see, you know, UNT's presence in downtown Dallas and north and South Dallas now. And I think we've got to work with these educational institutions, with our headquarter companies that are located here, as well as a philanthropic. And then let city government focus on the basics and creating a environment where everybody can thrive, opportunity, making sure we have policies that are good for everybody. And that's really important. I think we could do a better job of that. And, you know, kind of fixing some of the wrongs from the past, going forward, and making sure that we really are creating opportunities.
So you've got your Mondays and your Wednesdays back, right?
Yeah.
And pretty much every other day of the week when you're answering phone calls, what are you going to do with them? What are you going to do with your time now?
Well, there's a lot of projects that get put on the back burner, the things around the house that need attention, or I really am looking forward to having more time with my grandkids, having lunch or meeting somebody for dinner. That right now, that it's just hard to have, I think a lot of my friendships and relationships have, you know, suffered. Other than your immediate family, you know, you tend to, you have so many different people pulling at you. You're attending so many events.
Mm-hmm. It'd be nice to with reporters like me. All the time.
It'll be nice to catch up and, you know, rekindle some of those relationships that I feel like I haven't been able to spend time with people, grab lunch with friends. So I'm, you know, looking forward to reading more books. I've read a few during COVID because I had a little more time. That's something, we have so much reading that we do for work, that it'll be nice to read for fun again.
Well, obviously, when what's next is talked about, your name gets knocked around a good bit for a future mayor. Can we get you to make an announcement here?
No.
I mean, do you ever think about... And I'm not trying to pin you down on this, but do you think your time in public service is over, I guess, maybe is one way to ask it.
You know, it might be. And if it is, you know, I've had 8 great years, and I've loved it. If something else comes up that I decide it's a good fit for myself and my family and timing, and, you know, I'm not saying that I'd never think about it again, because I really have enjoyed it, and I really feel like I can be effective. And I think we need people, you know, making choices like that. But if I've, you know, I thought about running for mayor 2 years ago, and I thought hard about it, and I decided against it because it wasn't right for me at the time. I figured my daughter was probably going to have a third baby and needed me around a little bit more, and my other daughter was going to get married. I didn't think we were going to have a tornado and COVID, but I did. I have the younger daughter's engaged and getting married shortly, and I had a third grandchild. So I didn't want to, you know, the flexibility as a council member is a little bit more than it is as a mayor.
Yeah.
And I still felt like I'm sitting there at a bridal fitting looking at my phone because of the things we've been dealing with. But as a mayor, I was, you know, wanted to be able to experience those lifetime activities with my kids. And so
the other comment that stood out that you mentioned in the piece that I read that Ryan Sanders wrote was you were interested in the intersection of health and government. Mm-hmm. And I wondered about that. I understand, obviously, your background as a nurse. It's been an interesting time for public health and government, you know, kind of working with medical experts. But what did you mean by that?
Well, public health, you know, is a class I had to take in nursing school, and I enjoyed that clinical portion. I don't think I really understood. When I was experiencing it as a nurse, it was all about, you know, what immunizations were required, communicable diseases, how diseases are reported. It wasn't about that government intersection. And now that I've served as a constituent, I see the role in all levels of government. It's really not so much City Hall. It's really here in Dallas. It's the county, is our health authority. But how important it really is that structure is in place. It's challenging in the fact that, you know, there's regular public health and then you get this pandemic and you're really not, that department isn't structured to be able to deal with that size of an issue. And you can't, and it doesn't make sense to have it always, you know, manned up enough to be able to deal with a pandemic when usually you're dealing with, you know, public health on a smaller scale. So
sure.
How do you scale
the right
it appropriately?
And plans in place.
But also, there's a lot of issues that a pandemic really highlights that I think if we had a better, if we were healthier as a city and you could work on public health proactively and not just be reacting to diseases or that you could actually work on keeping people healthier, you know, we wouldn't have seen, I think, the death and devastation during this COVID.
No, I think that's right. And it's interesting things to reflect on. Well, you've had a great 8 years. I congratulate you on it. And thanks for you've done for the city.
Jennifer, thanks so much for joining us. We're excited to see what the future looks like and appreciate your service to Dallas. And to our listeners, thank you for checking out the Deep Side of Dallas podcast. For Rudy Bush, I'm Paul Corliss. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you both.
The Deep Side of Dallas is presented by the Dallas Morning News and the University of North Texas System. Our show is produced by Aiden Barrett.
If you like what you heard today, please follow the Dallas Morning News wherever you get your podcasts. You'll also get our daily news roundup and special audio reports. And if you have questions, comments, or guest ideas, we want to hear from you. Just email us at deepside@dallasnews.com. Until next time, I'm Rudy Bush.
And I'm Paul Corliss. Thanks for listening.